So, not really horror, but I just finished reading the, it was an audiobook, but High Fidelity. Remember the movie with John Cusack?
Yeah, I was talking about it the other day.
So yeah. And that is definitely an example of the movie being better than the book. Because the book is, like, most of the conversations, most of the dialogue is in there. It's almost a complete make of the movie. But the original book is in England. It's in London. And whereas you have John Cusack is just kind of like, he just pulls off kind of this sullen and maybe self-absorbed person, but he's just cool, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the guy in the book, he's just this pasty kind of getting overweight fat guy that's just like bitter and grumpy and stuff, and you're just like, John Cusack's Rob is much cooler than the book's Rob. And at the end, you're just kind of like, yeah, could have done without that one. So we probably need to do a show on that, where the movie was better than the book, because everybody says the book's better than the movie. But we'll see. All right.
So joining us on this lovely day, we have Joe. Joe is a member of the West Side Ghoulies, very good friend of ours. Huge horror fan, just looking around. We're actually at his place right now, so looking around his living room, you can't help but realize that Joe is definitely a horror fan.
Absolutely.
He's got some of the coolest stuff I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Joe collects actual bust of figures. I mean, look at that Xenomorph right there. The thing is a monster, dude.
It's beautiful.
It's not lightweight either.
No, it's the real thing.
Yeah, it's not fun to lug around.
I'm kind of curious. That axe he's got on the wall, it looks real enough.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually ATX Designs that vended at the film festival last year. That's one of their props that they make.
It's
pretty badass.
It's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Big props guy and, busts. That's kind of what I focus on.
And you've got, what, 3 Poltergeist clowns? I got the one that I'm holding at my house hospice right now.
Well, I've got 2. I've got that one at your house. I've got this one, and I have the 2 heads.
Okay.
Cool. Well, Joe is joining us for episode 178 of the Scary Dad Podcast. Today is June 12th, 2023. And the title of this show is Shark Attack. So lots of shark attacks in the news lately. I don't know how much our show is going to be intermingled with current events as far as the new business and the actual meat of the show, but we're going to see. But before we do anything, we have to ask Mr. Gomez to make an appearance.
First, the old business.
All right. So, I mentioned it last week, and it is true. We did the podcast for so long that we've lapped ourselves. So if I was trying to look at like either a Monday or Tuesday, Wednesday release, we've covered a lot of the stuff that happened on this day in history through almost 200 episodes. So I had to find a new information gathering place. So this time I decided we're going to go 40 years into the past for the old business. So June 12th, 1983, some little tidbits to know about. The number one movie, Return of the Jedi.
Absolutely. Yes.
And I did see that one in the theater.
I saw that one in the theater as well.
I remember my uncle took me and my cousin to see Return of the Jedi. And I was 8 years old in 1983. I would have sat through probably the majority of that movie by myself, because the Jabba Palace scene with all of the monsters scared Aaron so bad that my uncle had to take him out. And he was like, we'll be right back. And then they just didn't come back. And I think it was pretty much, it was way past the end of Jabba and into other scenes before they came back. And then they left again because they got scared of something else.
I actually saw that one in the theaters as a child, and then me and Melissa went last month for the May the 4th screening of, we actually went May the 3rd, but Return of the Jedi was in theaters again, but it was the one with the added scenes to it, which was kind of annoying, but all in all, it was a pretty awesome experience being able to watch on the big screen again.
For me, it was all VHS. I got them all on VHS. I didn't catch any of the Star Wars on that at the movie theaters, but I sure enjoyed them on the VHS.
You know, youngsters. Lifelong. Right. Young kids.
Right? Yeah, you know? Well, I mean, and some of the stuff we're going to talk about, but like, I've told the story many times, but the first Jaws movie I ever saw was Jaws 3, and it's because when we moved into our house, when I was a little kid, we moved into this house and we got cable when we moved in, and they left the cable guide, and it had that shark chasing the skiers on the front. And I was like, I have got to see this. I have to know what this is about. So I watched the third one, and then the second one was on TV, like late night TV, and my dad recorded it for me. And so, like, the first one was the third one I saw. And for me, that was like getting to the level boss. Like, that's the actual scary one, and the actual suspenseful one, mm-hmm. with all the lore to it. But part two is amazing. Right. I think part two doesn't get as much love as it should. You know, Ricky said that, you know, Jaws, the first Jaws was Rogue Shark, and Jaws 2 was serial killer movie with a shark, because the shark attacks people for no reason, like it hunts them, you know.
Yep.
So pretty damn cool. All right, I wish I had a cooler one for this, but the number one song at the time was "What a Feeling," the theme from Flashdance. So, you know, we got Return of the Jedi.
Irene Carey, right? Was it Irene Carey that sang "What a Feeling"?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the top TV shows. This was a top-down list, so I'm not exactly sure where they land, but the A-Team, Cheers,
nice.
Knight Rider, Family Ties, Knott's Landing, Dallas, Love Boat, and Chips were the top-rated TV shows at the time.
The Love Boat. There's a video floating around that you can watch where it's basically just, it's the Love Boat theme, and all they do is play all the different people that make guest appearances, because you know how they would... At the beginning of the show, back when they used to do all the credits before the show started, they would like show everybody in a little life preserver,
mm-hmm.
and they show everybody that was in the show, and just all, it was crazy how many people made guest appearances on the damn Love Boat.
Oh, yeah.
It was absolutely insane. Everybody wanted to be on the Love Boat.
And I think because it kind of swung around with streaming and television, because it used to be if you worked in movies, you didn't want to do TV.
Yeah.
And if you did TV, you wanted to do a lot of TV that hopefully would eventually bump you into movies. And it didn't happen terribly often. Like, George Clooney is one incredible success story, but it's like, you can name a few people that happened to, but now everybody wants to do TV. Movie stars are all about TV and TV series and stuff. But they don't, but back then, if you were on a show, you could guest on another one, just bump up your exposure, you know?
Clooney's best career decision to this day, has been Attack of the Killer Tomatoes Part 2. Had he not done that film, we might not know who George Clooney is to this day.
Absolutely. Certainly better than Ocean's 11. And that's what I got for the old business.
Okay.
A creature alive today has survived millions of years of evolution. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine that will attack and devour anything. One terrified you like nothing you have ever experienced when it captured your imagination and tapped your fear like no movie before it. Then, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, two continued the legend and spread the fear. Next summer, nature's most terrifying creature takes on an all-new dimension in an all-new adventure. And for the first time, the terror of Jaws will not stop at the edge of the screen. Jaws 3D, the third dimension, is terror.
You've been business is new business, and this is new business.
Alrighty, so we got a little bit of new business. Of course, I got some kind of themed for today, but also have some other cool stuff too. So we've talked about the Bermuda Triangle before, and how it's really weird how it's like the Bermuda Triangle shut down. They closed shop. They went out of business because it's just not as scary as it used to be. Remember growing up?
Right.
The Bermuda Triangle was some scary shit.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that really instilled fear in a lot of people. So I found this article that was really, really neat, and just the headline caught my attention. The headline was, "So many accidents occur here, it's called the Bermuda Triangle of Yosemite." It's like, hey, let me check this out for a second. And it's actually pretty neat. But when you look at it, you wonder, yeah, it's just some goofy people slipping and falling. But it opens up with a story about this guy, a climber named Ron Kalk. Hope I pronounced that right. But he had this really bad fall over at Yosemite National Park's Tenaya Canyon. And he said it literally felt like something grabbed him by his ankle and pulled him down and really messed him up. And apparently this certain area of Yosemite, this shit happens a lot. Like, people are constantly hurting themselves. And some people kind of looked into it, and actually some really bad shit happened there that I found very, very interesting. So let me find where it gets to it. There are literally hundreds of occurrences that happen in this area. And it just so happens that this area was the site of one incredibly bloody conflict during the Mariposa Indian War. It took place across what is now Yosemite National Park and surrounding Sierra Nevada from 1850 to 1851. And the war followed, of course, the arrival of white European settlers years prior and decimated the indigenous population. Like, in the 1840s, there were 7,000 people living in the Southern Sierra foothills, and there's literally a decade later, it was down to 700. They wiped everybody out. And in the middle of the conflict was Tenaya, he was the last known chief of the valley's native Alawahi people, and the canyon's namesake. So that canyon is actually named after this guy that was killed in this war. And he fought to keep his people in Yosemite Valley, did everything he could, and whenever he was killed, he actually said, "Kill me if you like, but if you do, my voice shall be heard at night, calling upon my people to revenge me in louder tones than you have ever made it ring." Wow. And a lot of people think that this spirit actually haunts this area of Yosemite and is killing goofy white people in North Face gear that are trying to climb stuff and really shouldn't be there because he does not want them there. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Something definitely cool.
To dive into a little bit and check out, because I had never realized that that kind of shit was going on.
It's very distinctly possible that's when Teddy Roosevelt was like, hey, we need to start national parks, and we'll start with roping off that area. don't go in there and start fucking around, because that old chief will pull you in the canyon.
And you know, in the podcast, of course, how we feel, you know, we definitely agree that the existence of supernatural spirits definitely are there.
Sure.
And you know what's cool is, you know, my theory has always been, I talked about it on the podcast before, because in high school I read Rudy Rucker's The Fourth Dimension, The Geometry of the Higher Reality. I've always felt as though that fourth dimension that exists that we can't see because it's on a different dimensional plane than us. Like, somebody that's in the second dimension cannot see the third dimension because they can only see this way and they can't see out. So if something passes through the second dimension, they just see it as a 2D object. And like, if the sphere passes through, they see it as a circle because they can only see the straight line. So I got to find the article and I'll find it for the next one, but I can't remember what scientific group is claiming they have found proof of the existence of a fourth dimension. And that's what I've always said. That's the dimension where ghosts exist and they can cross over. We just can't see them because we can't see in that fourth dimension. We're looking at things in 3D. So, yeah.
There's some crazy shit. I don't listen to them all the time, but occasionally I'll listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, and he's all about that crazy third eye pyramid stuff. And he had this guy on, I can't remember his name, but it was a recent episode, and the guy was talking about quantum computing. And so you know, you have the new Ant-Man movie just comes out and it goes into the quantum realm. So, like, when things get so small and they start trying to calculate size and depth and dimensional, and the things that he was talking about with parallel universes and things happening simultaneously across universes, right, and things. So it's one of those things, like, for example, whenever, and you could, but there's pyramids on both sides of the earth, they're similarly structured. How did these people just, there were no pyramids, and then one day somebody was like, hey, let's build a pyramid, and then everybody knew how to do it. And it's like, you talk to, like, mainstream archaeologists, they're like, well, you know, there's leaps in abilities. There's kind of an industrial revolutions that happen technologically throughout phases. So it's kind of naturally occurring thing. But when you go into the quantum realm, it's like, okay, so you have the spiritual realm, call it the theological realm, the place where God exists and people are religious and they live their lives with this knowledge that there is something beyond. But then we invent science, and science starts chipping away at that, and starts giving explanations to mundane daily life and chips away at that. But then science has drilled down to such a point that now they're in the quantum realm, where the building blocks of everything are actually quite a bit more magical and in a phase shift than everybody ever thought it was.
Right.
They thought it was going to be materialistic. You get down, you just get smaller, and smaller things rotate, and they get smaller, and they rotate, but they don't. They act like completely, and sometimes with an intelligence in that
right,
particle realm. It's awesome. I don't have any, like, my brain can't even comprehend that kind of stuff, but they've got people working on it.
Right.
And then, you know, there's AI. AI is going to kill us all here in a few years, so it really doesn't matter, you know. I got some interesting theories on AI, and a lot of them sprung up from a cartoon that I saw. And it's like, man invents science, man invents artificial intelligence, artificial intelligence perfects itself, enslaves man. The sunspot takes out AI. Man worships the sun, and then starts on a road towards inventing AI again. So the existence of AI is basically a small little eyeball of the universe waking up and looking around and deciding that its creation is not perfect and holy, and it needs to be controlled. And then at some point it gets knocked out, and we have memories of our spiritual overlord telling us how to be and what to do, because we had to. And then we've spent the whole time in between striving to wake it back up.
Right.
Because we're stupid monkeys.
Okay, going along with kind of the theme of the show on this next one. Imagine Memorial Day weekend. You take the family down to the beach, and you happen to be in San Diego, and you head down to Torrey Pines State Beach just for a nice relaxing day. Barbecuing with the family, cooking some hot dogs. And one of the kids looks over, and they see the water churning, and just blood absolutely everywhere. That was the scene on Memorial Day weekend over in San Diego, when a group of not fully grown, juvenile, but not too young, great white sharks decided to feast all of a sudden in front of everybody on a dolphin. It was insane. If you get a chance, search the video up. It's actually a video of it going on. But it's just a bunch of shark fins and a dolphin every once in a while popping up trying to save himself, and just blood absolutely everywhere. One of the things that was mentioned is, and as you know, it was a 10-foot-long dolphin, and normally it takes a pretty big great white shark to fuck with a dolphin, because dolphin are shark-killing machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do not fuck around when it comes to sharks. But it was just so over. Basically, you know, it was jumped by a gang of great white sharks, little thug-ass sharks. And absolutely tore him up. California State Parks have been alerted to shark sightings just 30 or 40 yards away from shore. But they didn't warn the beach. They didn't shut the beach down. They just put up some warning signs to let people know that there were sharks in the area. Luckily, of course, no one was killed, but it was a pretty traumatic scene for a lot of people. In that same area, back in November 2022, a woman was attacked by a shark. She had been swimming when a shark bit her in the upper right thigh. She didn't die or anything, just received treatment for puncture wounds. But yeah, it's a pretty cool video if you get a chance to go ahead and check it out. And that one kind of like led me to searching up. I was just curious. There's 12 states where the most shark attacks occur. Okay. And there's a lot of water around the United States. I mean, we're surrounded by water on three different sides. And what's amazing to me is by this, number two is Hawaii. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is understandable. It's an island out, warm waters. You're going to have a lot of sharks. And Hawaii, since 1837, has had 187 unprovoked shark attacks. Okay. Florida, since 1837, holds the number one spot at 912.
Wow.
It's a big ass gap. Yeah. And I understand the populations between the two areas are very different. You know, Florida has a larger population than Hawaii, but it's still a huge gap between the two.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's absolutely insane. So you got Florida at number one with 912, Hawaii at number three, 187, California at 136, South Carolina at 115, North Carolina at 78, and Texas rounding up that group at 45.
So remember our episode of Sharks versus Bears? This is Catch Joe Up. So we were curious, like, who would win in a fight between a shark and a bear? Because you'd have to land a shark, and then the bear's got the advantage, or you'd have to drop a bear in the water, and the shark's got advantage. So how do you scale them up? It's the number of attacks. And Scott and I were like, we would have given it to bears just because they're around much more than sharks are.
Yeah.
But it was something like 100-1. Bear attacks versus shark attacks. And mean ones, too. Like, disappearances. Like, catching people as they're running marathons and shit. Like, pulling them off the trail and, like, feasting on them while everybody else is up at the trailhead feasting on some granola. Fucking bears eating their buddy down the trail a little bit. Kidding. You know, mean stuff.
If I went on a trip to Montana, the last thing I'd want to see is a grizzly bear.
Oh, dude. There's a new video I saw yesterday of it's a cop. It's like body cam. And he's walking up and he's like, yep, we got reports of basically some dude left his four-door pickup truck unlocked and a big black bear opened the door and got in and then somehow the door closed and it power locked itself into the truck and went apeshit trying to get out and like tore up the seats. Wow. And the dash and just completely tore it up. And so the cop walks up and he's like looking in and looking in, looking in, and then like this head of the bear just pops up looking at him like, get me out of this, bitch. The cop's like, step back a little bit.
Okay, so last story, just a little bit of levity to our stories about shark attacks. Okay, so the opening of the story, I'm going to say a couple of things, and you'll understand why I picked this story. Okay. Gentleman by the name, 28-year-old man, by the name of Blaze Smith. Not making that shit up. Resident of the Eastwood Manor Mobile Home Park. Any guesses on the state?
I'm going to have to go with Florida.
Joe, any guesses on the state?
California.
You're both wrong in that. Mr. Smith is a resident of Mankata, Minnesota.
Wow.
Okay, so his home was burglarized. And apparently there had been issues with burglaries in the mobile home park a lot, and Mr. Smith was kind of sick of it. So he decided, you know what, I'm going to set up and I'm going to get ready for the next time this asshole breaks into my place, and I'm not taking this anymore. So, of course, next thing you know, the day after the break-in, 35-year-old Aldo Gomez decided to sneak in through one of the windows. Unbeknownst to him, Mr. Smith was waiting there with a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire with nails sticking out of it. Ow. Motherfucker was going to go walking dead on this burglar. So the guy breaks in, and all of a sudden, on surveillance video, you can see Don't know what happened inside the mobile home, but all of a sudden, Mr. Gomez is flying out of a window with Mr. Smith in pursuit of him, and Mr. Smith proceeds to go Negan on this guy with this baseball bat, fractured his skull, and beat the living shit out of him.
Wow.
Of course, Mr. Smith was arrested, unfortunately. Gomez was charged with felony burglary counts. Mr. Smith was investigated for a little while. He was initially charged, but he was released because he was protecting his home. We'll see if he ends up getting sued in civil court, because if I'm not mistaken, it is illegal to wait with a weapon for somebody to break into your home and you know they're going to come, and then beat the shit out of them with a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire.
See, I have to wonder, like, you have to prove that he was sitting there waiting. You don't have to put, like, I've got all kinds of weapons. They're just around the house because I think they're cool. But if somebody was to sneak in the middle of the night, I'm just going to grab the closest thing, and that might be a shotgun. That might be a novelty samurai sword from the Renaissance Festival. I would probably choose one or the other, but, you know, what you going to do? But if the dude walks in and gets himself stabbed up with a samurai sword, then I wasn't laying in wait, and I certainly didn't buy it to stab some dude. Right. You know?
You know, that just the idea that weapon takes you back to, I know I've mentioned this in the podcast before, for any new listeners, one of my favorite weapons I've ever seen, and Joe, I don't think I've ever told you about this. When I was a kid, there were like standard field trips we did every year, and one of the standard field trips was to go to the New Iberia Police Department. And we'd do a tour with the police and everything, and they would always take us to the evidence room. And I used to see this every fucking year, because for whatever reason, they kept it around, and they loved showing it to people. But someone had taken the talons of a rooster and had, like, dipped it in this lacquer to make it really, really hard, and they had tied the two talons to the end of a stick so that it was a weapon made for gang fights where you could cut this Freddy Krueger somebody with some chicken talons. It was fucking amazing.
That's awesome.
And every year I look forward to seeing it. Every year a very gleeful deputy, police officer would be like, this is one of the weapons we confiscated in City Park one night during a fight. And it was just the coolest thing to see. But yeah, I would love to have a chicken talon. You know,
you can buy chicken at ATV. Go down there and be like, hey.
Yeah.
Steam them up a little bit, drop them in the lacquer.
So that is it for our new business today.
Awesome.
Lost River, take 32. And action. Lost River is lost no more. Yes, friends, you can be part of a modern ecological miracle. Acres and acres of reclaimed land nestled in a scenic mountain valley, site of the newly formed Lost River Lake. You'll find swimming, sailing, snorkeling.
There's something strange in the water at Lost River Lake. Something you can't see. Something you can't feel. Until it's too late. Started in a Texas pond.
Barbara! Or is there something in here?
David! David!
Well, if it still works, it's the quickest way to know if they're down there or not.
What are you doing?
You drained a pond?
Yes, we found
it. You let them out!
They were unleashed into America's waterways to churn quiet streams into rivers of living death.
Keep your hand out of the water.
Ow! What's wrong with the water?
Dad!
Stay back!
Dad!
Stay back! Dad!
The world of carnivorous fish.
Piranha, the deadliest man-eaters of all. In schools of hundreds, they attack and devour anything that moves with razor-sharp teeth that can strip a man to the bone in less than a minute.
There'll be no way to contain them. They'll be able to swim up every river system in the country.
There's a school of piranha heading straight downstream towards your resort.
They'll kill us. All of us.
Science fiction.
You're not even
going
to say that word.
But the piranhas.
What about the piranhas?
They're eating the guests, sir.
They're here. And they're hungry. Piranha.
Okay, so we've been laughing a little bit the lead off into the segment here about shark attack, it wasn't specifically inspired by this story, but this story is making the headlines right now. There's a kid by the name of Cameron Robbins. He's an 18-year-old graduate, high school graduate from Louisiana, was on a graduation trip in the Bahamas. And they were on a pirate ship, pleasure cruise, booze cruise, you know, sometime at night.
And see the video. The video's scary.
On a dare, this kid jumps off the boat. And of course, all of the people around him, they throw him a buoy, they're calling to him, you know, whatever. But for whatever reason, he chooses to swim away from the buoy and goes out of sight, and he's never been seen again.
Yeah, the video's scary because the guy's like floating in the water looking at the camera and shit, and he's never seen again. It's like the last image of him.
And there's a whole bunch of internet sleuths saying that, you know, it looks like there's a shark that popped out, and it kind of does if you're looking at the video. It looks like something surfaces near him. You know, you're at night in the Bahamas. You know, there's a lot of sharks in those waters, yeah. You know. And they follow boats around because of easy meals, people throwing stuff off or, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's really tragic, but, you know, just kind of looking at it, I was like, oh, you know, summer movies and shark attacks and stuff in real life, shark attacks. And this is, like, you know, segmented off of the new business, but this is not really even podcast prep so much as what's kind of the over-under on shark attacks for this year. I mean, we're 6 months into the year, and it's just like, okay, so...
See, I didn't think that's what inspired it. I thought the fact that we're about to get a release in August 4th of this year of the one of the better shark movies that was made this year. The sequel's finally coming out, and that would be Shark Exorcist. I'm just joking. On August 4th, we get Meg 2.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Statham returning to his role as lead in the film. And if we're going to stay in this one, they're going bigger with three Megs as part of the plot as opposed to just the single.
Instead of one, you need three.
Yeah, you got to go big. Go big or go home, as they say.
I was pleasantly surprised on the first one. You know, I wasn't expecting anything, and wasn't as bad as I thought.
If they can get the shark to where it looks like it's eating stuff without it looking like superimposed video,
yeah,
like the one where the guy's on the jet ski and the shark just like he kind of just falls into the shark's mouth, whatever that's from. But no, that was on, he fell off the party boat or jumped off it on May 24th. On May 25th, a 22-year-old Connecticut woman lost her leg in an attack in the Caribbean. There's a man on January 31st, was decapitated by a great white shark. He was an abalone diver, got his head snapped off by a great white in Mexico. In February of 23, a man was killed by a great white, an Australian was killed by a great white shark, 59-year-old man. He was a school teacher. Like, again, out on a little catamaran, jumped in for a dip, and shark tore off his leg and part of his torso, and, you know, did him in. In December of 22, a 60-year-old woman was killed in a shark attack. She was out there just kind of snorkeling and disappeared, and they found some bloody parts. And then lately, they've got freaking orcas are, like, attacking small crafts. Like, yeah. Juvenile orcas are now starting to attack people boats and kayaks and shit that they've never really done before. Like, orcas are mean as hell.
Yeah, they're badasses.
But they've never really attacked humans. In fact, they're generally pretty friendly. But lately, not as much. So, you know... Some of these movies and books and TV shows take inspiration from real life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by far. People's real fears of stuff that goes on in real life. I mean, that's the biggest part of it. But, yeah, what I decided, though, is I'm going to do is as we talk about some of the more serious movies, I will throw out some of the goofier shark movies that have recently come about. And I promise it won't only include Sharknado 1 through 6. There will be some other ones sprinkled in there.
Is that dude from 90210 in all six of them?
Tara Reid is. The guy from 90210 is not. 90210 is
the blonde
not.
Guy? Nope. Like, that was his, like, comeback thing. The
first one. He hasn't been in all of them.
He had the chainsaw, and the shark fell on him and ate him, and then he chainsawed himself out.
Tara Reid has pretty much been the only consistent star in the six.
So she's the reason all the sharks keep hitching rides on tornadoes.
She must be the one that's behind everything. So
good for you, Jared Reed.
But I will, just while we're on that subject, I will mention the part six is one of my favorite titles for a shark movie because it just brings celebration. 2018's The Last Sharknado, It's About Time. It's literally the title of the last Sharknado film.
I love how they take those celebrities, like, was it Mega Octopus versus Mega Shark?
And yeah,
like,
we're going to get into some of those.
Debbie Gibson was in it. Like, teen pop singer with no acting history. Mm-hmm. Let's throw her in there and just, you know,
fill
a seat. So, Joe, you're the guest of the show. What's your favorite shark movie?
You know, it's going to be given to Jaws. Probably most everyone's favorite. But, I was kind of fascinated and watched that movie. I don't even know how many times when I was a kid. Probably like you in basket tennis. the series, part two was excellent. Part three was... It was there, and then part four, you know, they got a lot of hate, and I liked it.
You know, me and Andy were talking today, you know, to this day, the Quinn death scene in the original Jaws, There's not a single CGI shark kill that could compare to that fucking scene. Just the idea of the use of practical effects and the acting job by Quinn himself. Of him dying is just absolutely spectacular. I mean, it's amazing. And the effect that movie had on pop culture, cinema, just everything is undeniable. That is the greatest shark movie ever made.
Yeah, I saw this thing. It was a questionnaire. It was a meme sort of thing. It showed a picture of a lumber truck. You know, it was a pipe truck. And it's like, this Final Destination 2, has any single scene from a movie had such an effect on people's psyche than this? I mean, most people haven't seen that movie still will change lanes because of that, you know. Like, the guy answered is like, Jaws. Jaws made people scared to take a bath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, a bath. Like, I'm afraid to get into the water. Like, I'll take a shower, but I won't take a bath in 6-inch deep water because somehow Jaws is going to get me. And that, I mean, it caused like psychological problems for people.
And the thing about it is, if you look at the series, is the first Jaws the best of the series? It's arguable to say 2 is. But at the same time, without that first Jaws, you wouldn't have that second Jaws.
Of course.
And just the impact of that, they had I want to say it was 2 or 3 years ago, they did a thing out in Kima where they did a nighttime screening of Jaws. But
you were
floating in the water on an inner tube. And I was like, you know, that sounds really, really cool. And I was like, I would shit myself if something would brush up against my leg. I would literally freak out and drown.
See, they started doing that in Austin in the lake, which is fair enough, but that's salt, that's fresh water.
Yeah, you actually have sharks there.
Yeah, in Kima, there are sharks. And there are fishing boats that go in and out and dump their shit off and like, bring sharks in because sharks are opportunistic, you know?
Right.
Sharks are like little dogs sometimes. Yeah. They just follow behind you and wait for you to throw them a scrap. And once they get trained that that's what's there, then...
They continue doing it.
Yeah. If it's smells meaty and it's in the water, it's for them.
Right.
And
that's definitely the goat. Definitely. And I'll talk about another one. Just take for the next one. I was talking to Andy about this today, actually. Andy, he's been on the podcast before. Everybody knows Andy Gonzalez, love him to death. New pawpaw. Congratulations to Andy.
I love how he stretched the baby out to make her fart and hand her back to her mom. That is awesome. That is amazing.
But we were talking about another shark death scene that really, really stands out, and that was Samuel L. Jackson's death scene in Deep Blue. Granted, it doesn't compare in special effects, in my opinion, because of the use of CGI and everything. But that death scene was so
shocking.
Unexpected. Because you got Samuel L. Jackson being Samuel L. Jackson. Getting everybody hyped up. You're thinking, hell yeah, now they're going to fuck these sharks up. They can't be stopped now. And next thing you know, he's dead. That was an amazing, amazing death scene. And that movie could have been a lot better, but it definitely was far from the worst shark movie ever made.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I saw Deep Blue Sea, I thought it was properly scary.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it had
some jumps. Yeah.
It had its jumps and the sharks. But, I mean, and even the intelligence thing didn't really bother me, but the fact that they were like, oh, if we're sharks, but somehow now we understand the architectural structure of the rig, so we can go piece by piece and start popping off the buoys to make it sink and drive the people, you know, into the wall. It's like, I don't care how smart, like, you can take a guy who's got a genius IQ, he's not going to understand how to bring, like, building demolition without actually learning math.
Right. You know? Basically, it was like a three-year-old with a genius IQ.
Yeah.
You know, he's only going to be able to do so much. But the thing that I thought...
And LL Cool J and his damn bird.
The thing that killed me, and tell me if you've noticed this, but CGI went through a really weird-ass phase where you had really shitty CGI with, like, Dire Straits, Money for Nothing video. Mm-hmm. And then CGI got, like, a little bit better. And then you had, like, Avatar, which was really, really cool CGI. And then you had Deep Blue. And it's like, Deep Blue Sea, for a while, CGI got really shitty.
I think Avatar came out long after that.
But you had a phase where, for some reason, CGI was really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got better again. It was very confusing with the development of CGI.
Well, I think the development of CGI... The kind of timeline of it was, they had it, but it was similar to, like, smudging, like the land speeder in Star Wars, right? So they went to the film and individually erased the wheels from the sand speeder on the film itself.
Yeah.
And by doing that, it left that little smudge that whenever you're seeing the movie, it has that little hover look because the air is kind of... And so they were doing things of that nature. It was like frame by frame, little pieces where they could go in and digitally change things. And then it really made its big thing with James Cameron in Terminator 2.
That's a good one to bring up.
The T-1000.
But even the T-1000, a significant portion of his stuff is practical.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to that museum in Seattle where they have the big split piece where the bomb went off and blew him in half and he was all sideways. That was all... So they used CGI, like, they took a frame and they CGI'd, like, a little bit here and a little bit there and then it put a different application on him and a little bit here and a little bit there to make it move. They animated it. But it was real.
Right.
Like, on screen, the actors are interacting with something real. And James Cameron is such the artist that he's like, okay, let's use this and make it awesome. But in the spots where CGI is actually a part of the scene, all of the money, the best designers, the best computers, state of the art, as good as we can get it, 100%. And then anybody that wanted to do something with it, it was so cost prohibitive that they had to, like, dial it back. So, like, while he was already on, like, 4.0, everybody else was using one for their commercials and their cartoons and their movies and stuff. And so it had to develop its own course to get to where the good stuff was reasonably priced that it would outweigh practical effects.
Right.
Because with practical, even though practical is better visually because it's more organic, practical is expensive.
Yeah.
And the people who are good at practical are... There's not many of them. I mean, as a rule, there's not a whole lot of really good practical effects people that could do that kind of thing. So a lot of times people are like leaning back. It's like, oh, will you hire this guy for a shitload of money or will you... buy a computer with some software on it and then just kind of bump that bump it up. So I think the problem was that you had Terminator spoiled you to what it could do, but nobody could afford to do that. So was the world was catching up to what it was already done because James Cameron just had all the money. Because he did it with Titanic, but you would never think Titanic was a movie with full of the shitload of CGI. And he built half the ship and freaking sunk it, like in real life.
Yeah.
You know, but he did a whole bunch of CGI to make it seem more real.
Yeah. So where do you want to go next?
And say, like, they need to do Shark-tanic. Like, they need to make a Titanic.
I know that it hasn't been done already.
They need to do a Titanic sinking in the Bahamas. And then the sharks get a hold of all the survivors. So all the people in the lifeboats are like, sorry, bro, you're third class. And there's a heroic DiCaprio that's like trying to class warfare and get rights for everybody or something. I'll write that story.
Melissa actually came up with the idea of a Titanic zombie story, which I thought was kind of cool.
Really. Did you see the video that I sent you?
No. Which one? Wait.
There is a horror con somewhere, and all these people
went as
Titanic zombies,
and
the makeup looks amazing. It is so cool. Freaking zombie babies in there and everything. Hey, don't mind me. I had to get a beer. So.
Yeah, I know. I know how it is. I figured we just edit that out. Okay, so I'll throw in a goofy one while we have a slight lull. 2016's Sharkenstein. It's an actual movie that was really made. It had a director and a cast and everything. In the final days of World War II, a secret experiment to weaponize sharks is shut down and destroyed by the Third Reich. But now, 60 years later, a small ocean town is plagued by a bloodthirsty, mysterious creature. One built and reanimated using parts of the greatest killers to ever inhabit the sea, the Sharkenstein monster. The thing had like tentacles and shit.
Have you heard of Peter Benchley, who wrote Jaws? Have you heard of a book called White Shark?
No.
I don't remember what the TV series or the TV made for TV movie was called, but this came out in like the 90s. But the book was called White Shark. And the premise was exactly what you described. Except for what they did was they were weaponizing people with shark DNA. And to make like ultra deep sea divers. So they were taking these basically Nazi soldiers and grafting them with shark DNA and giving them gills and making them able to withstand pressures. And anyway, this thing was in hibernation in a box at the bottom of the ocean, and it gets bumped by a trawler, and the thing wakes up. And for the first three quarters of the book, it's just a shark. It's swimming around, like, whatever the creature is like tearing off arms and killing people. But all the people are like, can't believe what they're seeing. And as you're reading the book, you're like, well, I mean, if I'm in the water and something with teeth is coming at me, like, I might be really fucking bummed out about it, but I kind of know what it is.
Right.
Like, oh, man. You know, unless it's a barracuda or something, you know, you're like, oh, it's a flash of light, and now I'm just bleeding. But no, that was what it was. And at the end, it actually comes onto land and, like, pukes up all of the seawater and stuff and then starts stalking people on land because it's all just... It's like 60 years old and, screwed up in the head. And they end up blowing it up somehow, like probably using some old World War II ordnance just to make it, you know.
Fit.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like this dude with shark teeth and claws and webbed fingers and like super muscular. And in the TV show, because in the book, it had a human head. It was a human that had just been modified. But in this one, it looked like King Shark.
Okay.
It had a human body and then a shark head, and it was really bad CGI. It did look kind of cool. King Shark from Suicide Squad, by the way.
Yes.
Sylvester Stallone
voiced it.
Yeah.
Awesomely.
Yeah. That was a really good movie.
So what's another one you got?
Well, you know, talking about shark attacks and summertime, it was not the most entertaining movie. In fact, it was kind of boring until the shit hit the fan, but Open Water.
Yeah.
Open Water is kind of like watching a documentary of dread. You're like, you know that things are not going to end well, but you watch it anyway.
Right.
And it's not like a everybody dies sort of thing like Terrifier, where you're like, oh, whatever Art the Clown is, you know, whatever he is, nothing good's coming out of this. In Open Water, it's a true story. It's like just people just got left. Just left. Boat took off, and they're like, well, we're out in the middle of nowhere, and there's hungry sharks everywhere. That shit scared the Jesus out of me. Because I've been off a boat snorkeling before. You know? Like, how bad would it be? You pop your head up, and there's just no more boat. You're just like, oh, well, here we are. I guess my next thing to be in this universe, shark poop. That was one of my fun memories of my little girl. We were in Barnes & Noble or someplace like that. We were walking through the video section and she saw the cover for Jaws. And that cover for Jaws, the girl sits swimming on the surface and the shark's coming up after.
Yep.
And Autumn looks at her and looks at the video. She's like, well, she's dead. I was like, yeah, she becomes shark poop pretty early in the movie. And she's like four. She goes, sharks poop? And I was like, maybe everything poops.
Everybody poops.
And she's like, oh. And she looks at it again, and I shit you not, she goes, poopin' shark doo 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 shark. Like, no sympathy for the lady who got eaten. Just sing a little song about sharks doing their pooping. So, what's your next one?
You know, I'm trying to remember the name of it. It came out, I believe, 2016, 2017. Had a couple of friends, ladies, that went out on a ship. It was chartered. It was kind of a rinky-dink ship, and they were dropping. They were gonna put them in a shark cage down in the water. This movie gave me anxiety.
Wasn't it 47 meters?
No, it was 47 meters down.
Yeah.
Talk about, okay. They're gonna die. They're gonna die. So they're gonna either die by drowning, or they're gonna be eaten by a shark. Two ways I'd not like to go. So I mean, you know, that was a good one for me.
I have got a book that it had to have been my dad's or my uncle's or something, because I was born in 75. I was born about 3 months after Jaws came out. And this book is from 1975, and it's this hardcover book, and it's called Man Eating Sharks. And remember the book that Brody is looking through?
Yeah.
With all the shark attacks, mm-hmm. with the pictures of the chunks of flesh ripped off and like that stuff. All of those pictures are in this book, and talks in great detail about all these different shark attack victims and where they were and what they were doing. And a lot of them are off the coast of California, and you know, surfers and scuba divers, and the whole book is just about man-eating sharks. There's a painting inside of this book that you say is like gives you anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like this painting, the first time I saw it, I was probably like 10 or 11. And what it is, it's a painting from like deep inside the shark's mouth. So you see from inside the shark, you see the outline of the jaws and the teeth. And outside the shark's mouth is a diver. And the diver, he's got cuts on his arm and leg. He's got this big round mask, and he's just screaming out because his regulators have been cut. And he's got a knife in his hand. But this shark's, the one that you're looking at, he's got POV from inside its mouth. And then there's other sharks around. So even if he gets away from this one, those guys are coming after him. And it's just the absolute, like, this guy's dead, just not yet.
Yeah.
But there is no rescue. Like, he is not getting out of this. And, like, that used to just give me shivers. Like, holy shit. Like, it, like, and he's already cut. So it's not like, oh, we can just pile into a ball and sink to the bottom and hope for the best. Like, they're crazy.
He's done it. Yeah.
He's over with. And so, yeah, like, that stuck, you can't get out. Oh, that's not good. I'm going to say back to Piranha, dude. When I was a kid, I thought we were talking about like that meme where it talks about you think quicksand is going to be a whole lot worse when you grow up because of all the shit that we saw with quicksand in it in the 80s. You know, everybody was dying in quicksand. You just knew. Like, you just got to be careful. There's quicksand everywhere. Piranha was like that because you had the Richard Pryor getting attacked by the piranha in the toy.
In the toy.
Which, why there was piranhas in that lake, you know, out by the dude's house.
But, well, you know, remember he explained his dad put him in there because people were, there was a private area and people were coming down there swimming. And the dad didn't want people swimming in it anymore, so he threw piranha in there.
Still, like, that's not cool.
Not at all.
It sucks. You just want to go for a swim in your lake?
You know what I found interesting is, you know, he had a couple of ripoffs from Jaws. You had Orca in 77, you had Piranha in 78. And just during research for this episode, I have no idea why I never saw this before, but you know who directed 1978's Piranha? Joe Dante.
Oh, yeah.
Who also, Gremlins. You know, he directed Gremlins shortly thereafter. But yeah, Joe Dante did Piranha. And it's not a bad movie. It has a huge cult following. And we talked about the sequels the other day, of course. Mm-hmm. Piranha 2, Piranha 3D, and Piranha 3DD. It was just some goofy-ass movies, but Piranha's actually not a bad movie at all.
No, Piranha's a good movie, and it's properly scary. And piranhas are... they're mean shit. I was watching a documentary on them on, like, Nat Geo or something, and it was saying that they were trying to figure out, because piranhas are not naturally aggressive, and they live in an ecosystem where other things live. So they're not just in there just like a cancer, just tearing up everything. They're a scavenger, and they take out things that are injured or hurt, right? Like sharks generally do from big marine mammals. They'll attack sick whales, but they don't normally go after full-grown ones because they... But they were saying... this is freaking horrifying. There was a bus. This is down in the Amazon. It's like a tour bus driving down one of those country roads with no guardrails and probably no driver's license and bald tires and no suspension. And this bus went off the road and into the water. And when they recovered it, skeletonized. And they're trying to figure out why these particular piranhas were so aggressive because they never really had an issue with them before. And they were going out there and... they had piranhas in the water, like they had cameras, and you can see the piranhas just kind of, they school like perch. They just kind of hang around in the grass, and they're just kind of chilling. And so what they were doing was they were taking fish, like, I'm not going to say salmon, but maybe like little bass or trout or something that were native, but fish that were not distressed, and taking them and just setting them in the water and letting them go. And the fish would hit the water, swim away. And the piranhas didn't look, didn't notice, didn't care, but they got a fish and like it was they
put it on a hook or something.
So like they're just attacked. They just attack that distress signal. They're just drawn to that distress signal. But dude, like the bus rolls over, you fall in the water. You're like, I'm still alive and I've got a pocket of air. And then you just kind of, it's like, son of a bitch, something got me.
And then you start panicking, and then they all come after you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's, you know, when I was in college, I had a friend of mine that had three of them. And we used to, somebody ended up, somebody that hates him, ended up reporting them to Wildlife and Fisheries, and they got confiscated, but it used to be so much fun feeding those things.
Oh, I
it was awesome, dude.
Yeah. They got them at the Houston Zoo. They're cool. They're cool.
Yeah.
They swim in there with all kinds of other stuff, too.
They were a bath. Okay, so you ready for a little bit of Goofy to bring some more levity?
Ghost Shark?
No, even better. So riding off the success of 2009's Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. Did not change that name at all. That was the name of the movie. It's a movie I am proud to say that I saw. Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus. Came out in 2010. Pretty much the title gives you the plot. Mega Shark goes up against a African freshwater crocodile named Crocosaurus. Coolest thing about this movie, it stars none other than Jaleel White. You know who Jaleel White is?
Yeah, yeah.
Steve fucking Urkel is in this movie taking on Mega Shark. It's goofy as shit, horrible CGI, but it's a fairly fun movie if you enjoy goofy bad CGI movies. I definitely recommend
with Mega Shark with annoying 80s or 90s icons on them.
yes, and he is very annoying in real life. So yeah, that's another one of the goofy ass. There's so many goofy ass shark movies. It is ridiculous.
So this is a shark movie, but I think because it is a Jaws ripoff. But there's it's hard to draw that line.
You say ripoff, but it's actually a good movie. So I would say it's a
with Orca,
maybe.
Yeah, it's an homage. But yeah, but I mean it's an out there story, but it's a good movie. If Jaws didn't exist and Orca came out, it would be hard to pick it apart too badly for just being a straightforward, you know, man versus beast sort of movie, because, you know, it has Richard Harris and Bo Derek in it. I mean, it's star-studded cast. The effects are really pretty good.
They are. I enjoyed them.
I think, again, if you take kind of like the eye doctor thing where they cover up your bad eye and you're looking at the movie with your good eye, it's a pretty damn good movie.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
And, you know, honestly, when you think about the two species as far as the orca and the great white, orcas are pretty fucking smart. That's a little bit scarier than, mm-hmm. you know, a great white shark. Because mm-hmm. orcas can think and they can problem solve and shit.
Have you seen those ones in the videos where they're hunting seals on the ice floes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they go through and like bump part of it and like herd the seal. I mean, they're in the water and the seal's out of the water and they pop their head up and they're like, okay, we need them like 3 degrees, you know, northwest. And they go in and like bump the ice flow just a little bit so the seal scoots. Mm-hmm. And then they break off the ice so that he's
by himself now.
So he's now by himself on the flow. And like all the other seals are over here. They could have busted up in the middle and like taken a bunch, but nope, they're targeting their prey. They're like, this one's fat, let's get him. You're just like, dude, the same thing. It's like, now I'm all by myself on this little ice floe surrounded by hungry killer whales. And this is those questions, because killer whale teeth and great white shark teeth killer whale teeth are bone crushers.
Yeah, and puncture. They can puncture. They're
smushers.
Yeah.
Great white shark teeth are razor sharp.
Yeah.
And they buzzsaw you out. So, I mean, I have to say, if I had to get, like, which would be a worse way to go, I'd have to say probably the orca. Because those fuckers also will flip you with their tail and fling you.
Yeah.
Like, pop! And, like, knock you, like, 20 feet up out of the water. Break all of your bones and just let you sit there and kind of scoot and try to struggle for breath while they laugh. They literally laugh, like, as they're swimming around. They're psycho little bastards. They're awesome. But yeah, I mean, the great whites, they don't give shit. They're just like, hit you, let you bleed out, you know, come tear off another chunk. So where in this one does the alligator land? Alligator is one of those hard-boiled 80s where it's like...
Alligator was
you got the saxophone soundtrack of the hard-boiled streets of New York, because that's where the gator was let go. So he's stalking the sewers.
Right.
So you got bums and shit. Like, he's attacking people on dry land.
Yeah, that movie...
swimming pools, all the places where Jaws can't get you.
I'm very endeared to that movie just because as a kid I watched it so much. And being in Louisiana, we had alligators everywhere, so I kind of like, you know, really got into it. I've rewatched it recently on Shout TV, streaming service, and I still like it, like, a lot. It has so many weird-ass characters in it. Mm-hmm. You got the bounty hunter who's just this misogynistic piece of shit asshole. That when he dies, you actually cheer for it. You got the really goofy guy that's selling unwanted pets, and he's kidnapping people's pets to sell them to the laboratory for experiments and everything. It's a pretty cool ass movie, to be honest with you. It, God, I love Alligator. Alligator is a very, very good one.
Yeah, I same thing. That was one of those like heavy rotation when I was a kid. So, you know, I don't remember the last time I watched it from beginning to end, but there's just scenes in that movie that are just unforgettable.
Yeah.
You know?
The whole swimming pool scene was the scariest one in the movie, though.
Oh, for sure.
You know, just they had no idea that alligator. But what was funny is when they finally like show the full alligator, and it moves so slow. It's like, how could you not get away from that thing?
But that's the same thing as American Werewolf in London. That's really the only, and it, as criticisms for that film go, it's minuscule.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But that climax scene where the wolf is surrounded and all the cops are just standing there, and it's just kind of like, I'm just here now being kind of surrounded. Like, it kind of loses its menace just a little bit when she's like, I love you. And like, then it, you know, that just that very last little bit at the circus, that doesn't take away from every second of that film that came before. And it ends properly because he had to die. He couldn't be redeemed. Yeah. He couldn't be saved. That's the whole point of the werewolf curse. But there is that just little bit where he's just not as, like, he doesn't have back legs. You know?
Right.
Like, he's just a guy in a, like, in a little cart. Like, the front end looks crazy. The back end, not so much. So.
It was funny about that movie is, you know, you, as a kid, you watch it, and you get the plot, and you get, you know, they're doing experiments on these animals where the drugs are given to animals, the shark is ingesting them and everything. And that's what's
the alligator.
The alligator.
Yeah, right.
That's what's making them grow to this ridiculous size and stuff. And as a kid, you're like, that shit could really happen. And you really start believing that there's probably alligators in the sewer that are, like, living these long-ass lives and stuff. It's,
and I think, if we could just segue for a second, we talked about and completely segue, but we talked about Kindergarten Cop last week, right? And I think what was so refreshing about watching that damn movie is it didn't take 45 minutes to explain Schwarzenegger's history or the bad guy's history or what their relationship was or why they lived in California or all of the shit that modern movies do now with, like, you have an entire Marvel movies explaining, like, origins of superheroes.
Yeah.
Which you need, because you need to know who the superhero is, but it's like a whole lot of other movies are like, oh, well, Marvel movies are popular, so if we've got, you know, Bob and Jane, then Bob needs a whole movie to explain why he's Bob, and Jane needs a movie to explain why she's Jane, and then they'll finally meet in the third movie, and you're like, I'm fucking tired of this. Like, I'm sick of it, you know what I mean? Whereas, like, Kindergarten Cop's like, bad guy, cop after him, undercover, done. Now we're into the fun shit. Like, we're into the fun shit 20 minutes into the movie, and we got another hour and 40 minutes left, and it can be cool.
Right.
Whereas, like, with them, they're like, oh, you know, here's the blah 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 device that causes dead things to rise from the, you know, rise from the grave. I don't need to know how it works or what frickin' Neil deGrasse Tyson thinks about it. It just is the thing. And the shark ate it, and so now it's a zombie shark. Let's go!
It's like Patton Oswalt did a bit once where it basically was trying to explain it to somebody. He was like, you know, I really like cake. You don't have to tell me how you made it. Just give me the fucking cake. I don't need to know how many eggs you use or how many cups of flour. Just give me the cake. That's all that I want. Give me the cake and let me eat it.
Have you seen Bill Burr's discussion about abortion on that one?
No.
It's the exact same thing, but in the opposite direction. Because he's like, oh, you're killing a baby, blah, blah, blah. It's like, he's not a baby. He's like, that's like saying, like, I got the eggs and the batter and whipped it up, and I was just about to put it in the oven, and you come kick it out of my hand. And you're like, I'm like, my cake. And you're like, it wasn't a cake. Like, well, it's fucking gonna be. Like, that dude just goes places that nobody else will, and everybody laughs, and it's fucking funny. I'm not getting too deep into stuff. I just love it whenever comedians touch on subjects that people get squeamish about.
Sure.
And not only do they touch on it, but they drill deep. At the end, you come out feeling a little bit dirty, but still, like, cracking your ass up.
Well, while we brought up alligator, we could bring up another aquatic animal movie that, while the movie is pretty terrible, it features a performance by John Voight that you just get so confused at, because you're like, that can't be John Voight trying to speak in a Spanish accent that is fucking terrible.
Oh, Anaconda?
Anaconda, yes! That movie is just, and you want to talk about bad CGI and everything else, and you know, they spent some money on that cast. That was not a cheap cast that they had in that movie, but just, it was cast very poorly. John Voight never should have been in that role. It was fucking terrible. I mean, like, his accent was just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think John Voight was in that movie because at that point he had transcended being John Voight and was now Angelina Jolie's dad. And so they were trying to pull him into stuff just to make him, like, into stuff because she was so famous.
Yeah, that movie is just, I mean, the best performance in the whole movie is Ice Cube, which is saying a lot when you have a cast like that. I mean, you got John Voight and you got Ice Cube in the same movie, and Ice Cube does a better performance than him.
So, you were mentioning the Meg, right? I'm one of the few people that actually read that book, because kind of like Loch Ness Monster, the same writer has a book called The Lock, I think. And the original story of the Meg, same exact premise, right? But the way he describes it is that water gets continuously colder to a certain depth, and then you start to hit those volcanic pockets down really, really deep, like in the Mariana Trench, and that water is very, very warm. And so you had the megalodons living way, way, way down deep in the trenches. And I don't remember in the movie how they got it out. Do you remember how they got it up?
I don't remember, actually.
In the book, they hooked one on accident. They were down there, they were trying to find something, and it wasn't a megalodon that they were even looking for, because they all agreed that it was extinct. But it was just, but these megalodons live down there, and one of them, they hooked a male, a small male, and they were pulling it up. And the female attacked it because it was in distress, and the blood flow from the male kind of shielded the female from the cold water as it was being dragged up. And it got up to a certain point where it was able to survive, but the megalodons were albinos. They've been living so far beneath where the sun could reach, they didn't have any coloration.
Sure.
And their eyes were very, very sensitive to light. So as soon as it comes up to the surface and sees the sun, it burns its eyes out. So it was going on smell and vibration alone, and out of its element and starving, because it was feeding on large animals at the bottom. And now it's up there, and there's nothing bigger than certain whales, and it would just, like, zip through them real fast, and it's like freaking out, and it was like tearing shit up, and right. It was like really good and scary, because you've got this kind of fucked up but plausible premise for a scary story with this white, like literally albino white blind shark the size of like two city buses just smashing into shit. And it was like, this is awesome. I remember reading that book, like, flip of the paper, like, hell yeah, hell yeah. And it didn't, like, eat people like Jaws does. It, like, tore up submarines and shit. And they're like, oh, we're a nuclear submarine. We're awesome. And it's just like, they're like, uh-oh, it busted a stabilizer. We have to surface. And then it, like, oh, hell yeah, it's scary, dude. So.
We're going from reptiles. We can jump over to amphibians for a second.
From
with a movie that I remember as a kid just seeing the VHS cassette for this and just being intrigued by it. Because I don't even remember, they used to have a picture, it was a frog with like mm-hmm. a hand coming out of his yep. mouth. So when you look at the VHS, you're thinking, gotta be a big ass frog for a human hand to be sticking out of his mouth. And then you get the movie home and it's just regular old frogs. And I found out, just researching a little bit for tonight, there's a horror subgenre called eco-horror. I never realized that it was eco-horror, which is interesting. Basically, the plot of the movie is
animals,
these animals enacting revenge for the way we treat the environment and stuff, which I thought was pretty cool. But yeah, Frogs is a great movie. I might watch that tonight, actually, when I get home, because I haven't watched it in a while. But Sam Elliott's the biggest star in it. And that one was 1972, so that was like a... Even before Jaws, yeah. We had Frogs that came out. Yeah, Frogs was a trip, because it's dumb. You know, these people are killed by these frogs that are slowly coming across. And they're just regular-sized frogs that you could normally step on and deep fry.
Like the one I ran over the other day. Batter.
What was that?
You took care of that one I ran over the other day, right? Yeah. Was that you or was
no,
that
it
Sean?
Wasn't me. No, it wasn't me.
Oh, okay. I was pulling my car in, and I guess it was my neighbor, Sean. I was pulling my car into the garage. My wife's standing there, and I get out, and she's got this, like, freaked out look on her face, and my buddy's, like, putting shit in the trash can. I was like, what's going on? She's like, oh, you just hit a frog with your car. But I hit him, like, he was sitting in the garage, and I didn't see him, so I just rolled and just like, and like, popped him like right out the front, and so, yeah, he went over there, and scraped him into the. Sorry, frog. Well, I'm about out. The only other one that was, it was good, but it wasn't great. But it is probably, let's say, as shark movies go, The Shallows was very good. The body count wasn't too high. I mean, he took out those two surfers pretty quick. And then the rest of it is just her trying to figure out how to outsmart it. Scary enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Shallows was pretty good.
It was.
And finally, you're talking about alligators. You saw that alligator stranded those people on that fishing pier, or on the fishing in the lake.
No.
And I think it was in Louisiana. It was either Louisiana or Florida. It was like a week or two ago. They're swimming in a lake, and they had one of those, like, just like in the raft in Stephen King in Creepshow. Mm-hmm. Freaking, all these people were out on the raft, and they got up there, and they're sitting there sitting in the sun, and all of a sudden, alligator surfaces and starts swimming around the raft waiting for people to come try to get back to shore. And they were freaking out, and they were so far from shore, they were calling people, and people were like waving, taking pictures. Like, hey! And they had to call like game warden to come out and like go out in a boat and like chase the gator off so people could get off the thing.
Alligators are a trip. Yeah. I mean, I've had some experiences just back home. I remember one of the wildest ones is me and my neighbor, right before I moved to Houston. I used to cast net for shrimp all the time, and we took his son and one of his son's friends to go. We were going to cast net for shrimp. The boys wanted to throw a turkey neck on a string and go crabbing and stuff. So we're going to the weir, which is basically like a dam with water running through it, where we go to cast net, and we find a spot for them, and we pull over to the side, and it's just this little kind of piece of land that goes out a little bit with a little dock and everything, and we set them up right there to go ahead and try to get crabs and everything, and we left them there by themselves. So we catch our limit of shrimp and everything, and we come back to pick them up, and they're still crabbing and stuff, and still catching some, so we figured we'd go ahead and join them for a second and everything. So go ahead and I tie one, and I throw it out. Now, these kids had been out there for like 2 or 3 hours, okay? So I throw mine out, and immediately, all of a sudden, they didn't even know it was there. This huge, about 8-foot alligator jumps out from under the pier they were in. They had been sitting there the entire time. And I was telling Joe, I was like, if one of those kids would have slipped and fell in that water, they would have been their ass. And they had no idea. The alligator was just chilling out, waiting.
Mm-hmm.
It was waiting for something to happen where he could go ahead and jump at it. It's crazy, man. And I had a friend of mine, so been alligator hunting several times. And I had a friend of mine, Kevin Lejeune, who I worked offshore with, and he used to alligator hunt, and he asked me to go with him. Well, Kevin didn't hook him and shoot him. He killed him with a knife. And what Kevin would do is we'd go out on the boat, and he'd spotlight for them, and he could usually tell how big they were by their eyes. And we'd pull the boat up to the side, and he'd roll out the boat real quick, and he'd jump on top, and he'd have the knife in his right hand, and with his left arm, he'd go around him, and he'd gut him right there in the water. So we're doing it one night, and we pull up next to this alligator. Kevin rolls out the boat, and all of a sudden, water just starts churning. And this alligator is doing a death roll. And every time Kevin would come up to the top, he would say something real quick before going back under. And I remember I was laughing my ass off because he comes up to the top and he goes, "It's a big one!" And then he goes back under, and he comes back and goes, "I can't get it!" And then he goes back under, and he's just repeating this over and over again until he finally kills it. It was fucking incredible. But he finally killed it, but it ended up being like a 6.5-foot alligator.
Wow.
When he jumped on. Yeah, but it was so funny. Just every chance he'd get, and he'd get a breath, he'd throw something else out there. "I need some help!"
What are you supposed to do?
What am I going to do, dude?
Start stabbing with a gaff or something?
So yeah, he didn't let go. That was the thing. He didn't let go. He just stayed holding on to it as he went back and forth on the water. But
throw me a knife.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Well, hell, man. If you haven't seen all of these movies, you need to pick and choose. I mean, even the silly ones. There's your high quality horror. That's, you know, the Godfather type stuff, like The Shining, the Kubrick, and the Spielberg stuff. And there's also your lowbrow shit that's just as fun and entertaining.
The biggest thing is going into a movie with the proper expectations. You don't go into Two-Headed Shark with expectations that it's going to be a classic. You go into it thinking it's going to be a goofy-ass movie starring Carmen Electra and Brooke Hogan. And you just take it for what it's worth and have fun with it.
Well, and that's, I think, too, that's a big part of how the whole genre was made, because you know, you had those, the Universal Studios, where they reused sets, and they reused actors, and reused stories, and you hear the story about, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and her name escapes me right now, I have her autograph, but she was a contract actress. She was an actress in all kinds of westerns, and then she just gets the call, be on set
Newmore.
For the...
not Newmore.
It's Julie... I'll think of it. She played Kate, the creature. She's like, show up for this horror movie, and she's just on spec. She gets paid like a per hour per movie thing. She's like, "I didn't really want to do a horror movie. I wanted to do like romances, but it turned my career, you know." There's so many of these movies that nobody really. I mean, they were a box office draw, but nobody expected them to still be around.
Right.
And then the horror hosts came out and...
Julie Adams.
And, you know, the horror hosts came along and reinvigorated a lot of these films because they were just in the vault.
Right.
And then now, would you compare A Creature from the Black Lagoon to, you know, Tornado Shark? No, but give it time.
Yeah.
You know? Because somebody somewhere is going to eventually, like, you know, 60 years from now, I'll be like, "Oh man, all these crazy, silly movies they made before we had AI to like make things more realistic. It's cheesy, but it's fun."
It's fun. You know? You got to go in with the right expectations. Look at all the great movies that, you know, if we thought that way, we never would have watched. Zombievers, as we always talk about.
Yeah, that one stands out because it was so stupidly, unexpectedly good. Like, so bad. Like, so bad in all the ways that a movie could be bad.
And we had to finish it.
But we had to see how where it went. We had to sit there and watch it because this is fucking interesting. And then the bitch turns into a beaver at the end. She's kind of slapping her tail.
Slapping
and she turns like into a were-beaver. Dude, that was like the payoff right there. Like the big titty chick, like, "I'm turning into a beaver with the teeth and the tail." Like,
and what I tell people all the time is Black Sheep, not the one with Chris Farley, but Black Sheep, the New Zealand independent horror film. That one is just, you never expect that to be a good movie, but it is so much fun. It is hilarious.
All right, man. Well, I think that's a good place to stop. Check out some movies. It's summertime. There's no better thing to do than, you know, pull yourself up into a nice cold place, especially if you went swimming earlier and you got a nice sunburn, you got some cold AC, throw on a movie, kick back, take in some sharks, some rabies, dolphins, I don't know, some alligators, a little bit of everything, man. There's so much out there, and it's a lot of fun. So, hey, Joe, thanks for showing up.
Hey, no problem.
Thanks for inviting us
over.
Yeah,
having us over.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Shark Night. You know, you got to watch Shark Night.
And, you know, as we go, because we were talking about it during the break earlier, we're going to have some rotating cast members, and Joe's one of them. So, you know, as always, if you have an idea for a show, send it to me or Scott or Joe on Facebook. You know, just say, hey, I really liked you talking about this. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see more slashers. I'd like to see more, you know, Buried Alive. I don't know, just something. Aliens, Predators, all the fun shit. Just let us know. We'll talk about it. And if you agree, great. And if you don't, tell us what you would like to hear. That's how these things go. Keep it scary.
Later.
See ya.